Jason Amoy. Let's get started here because I
can't find anything.
This will class will go for about half an hour until about 12:15, and everyone's invited. Those who are present here are invited to lunch downstairs. Okay. And those who are on Zoom, you are invited to come in person next week and enjoy the lunch as well. Okay, so we are talking about free will, free choice. Last week we talked about the nature of free choice and God's knowledge. This week I want to talk about a little closer to home, and that is the nature of free choice from person to person. I'll just start off with a basic famous line in Pirkei Avos, and that is, don't judge your fellow until you reach his place. Or as they say in English, don't judge anyone else until you've walked a mile in his shoes. And as someone once pointed out, like this, when you pass judgment, you're a mile away, and he hasn't got any shoes to chase after you. But what is this idea? You know, don't, on a simple level, the idea is that you cannot, judge someone else's circumstances until you've actually experienced them. And experiencing them, it's unless you are actually that person, is nigh well impossible. You can't really fully judge someone else, and we leave ultimate judgment up to Hashem. Okay, that said, one could then say, well, then if that's the case, you can't judge anyone else until you're in their shoes and so on. That kind of opens a Pandora's box in terms of the idea of free will, because the fact of the matter is that we do have situations where we judge people. It's true in Torah law. It's true in secular society. Any society has a system of laws. People get judged, and they are judged. They are potentially convicted for a crime, and very often mitigating factors aren't introduced into court and so on. But how can we possibly judge someone else and pass judgment on that individual if we don't really fully appreciate what it is they're dealing with? Okay? So, on a basic level, the answer is you're right. We can't really fully, truly judge another person. However, the Torah has given license and, in fact, commanded society to create a court system with laws and rules and regulations. And so long as a person is of sound mind, we have an obligation as a society to have a court system with laws, with regulations. And by the way, it's one of the seven Noahide laws as well to create a court system. There's debate whether they have to follow Torah law, whether they can create their own fair system of laws. Clearly, most of society has taken the latter approach. But even though you cannot fully judge a person, the Torah has a system in place, or create a system, a fair system, to be able to judge other people under certain circumstances and pass sentences and so on and so forth. But that is true in the context of a court. The Torah says, when is a Beis Din? When there's a court, you are obligated to judge a person for a crime. The crime might range from stealing to damaging to murder to desecration or violation of certain commandments, which could be monetary punishment, capital punishment, corporal punishment, lashes, death, other potential things in modern society. Prison sentences are, a norm in American society for people who have committed crimes and so on and so forth. What I want to focus on is, okay, I'm not in court. I'm talking about me judging someone else and trying to figure out what that person's situation is. How do I ascertain whether this person is good or evil? Can I ascertain if this person is good and evil? How do I judge this person's free will when they're making a choice? How do the myriad factors in this person's life come into play? Environment, experiences, nurture versus nature, personality, conditions. What point do you cross the line and say, well, you know, have the insanity plea? The person is not of sound mind. How do you make that case? Rabbi Tatz talks about, I often invoke him when I'm speaking. He talks about, I think he was in touch with someone who had to testify, a psychologist or a psychiatrist who had to testify for a girl who had a compulsion to steal. And she got caught several times. And he was going to be called to court to decide if this compulsion was what we call a kleptomaniac. Was it a kleptomaniacal condition which was beyond her control and therefore she won't go to prison? Maybe she'll go to a treatment center. Or no. Is it within the pale of her control? Maybe very difficult. And therefore she should be held responsible. These kinds of questions come up all the time whether they're in court, whether they're on a day-to-day basis when you're judging someone else, or just, even though, like we said, don't judge someone until you reach their place. But for ourselves, how do we regard ourselves? How do we view, in general, society of people who have these struggles? You have a Jewish person who's brought up not knowing very much, you know, let's just say, knowing almost nothing about their heritage, and they violate many precepts of the Torah. Is that person good or bad? How should we view, again, not individuals, but in a general sense, right? The reality is a very strong percentage of Jewish people in the world today. Okay, let's assume that they are Jewish, which is, you know, complicated into itself. How do we answer that? Are these people good people or are they bad people? Well, they're not really keeping the mitzvahs of the Torah. Okay, let's contrast that to a person who is brought up in a religious environment and commits a relatively minor infraction. Who's better? The person who knows nothing and keeps one Shabbos his whole life, or the person who was brought up in a religious environment, kept every Shabbos except one. One Shabbos, he just, you know, couldn't hold himself back, and he had to send someone a text message. Today, that seems to be the great challenge. It's a real thing, apparently, for, you know, teenagers and, you know, people to actually not text on Shabbos. They even came out with this device that they claim, you know, allows you to send a text on Shabbos or social media without having to really violate Shabbos. Okay, and I'm not getting involved in that discussion today. Okay, I'm just giving you an example of where things have gotten. And, you know, the argument is you've destroyed the whole spirit. Even if technically you might be permitted, but you're destroying the whole spirit of Shabbos. And the counter argument as well is either that or they are outright violating Shabbos. Okay, so, you know, who's better, who's worse? The person who's brought up in a religious environment and desecrates one Shabbos, or the person who's brought up in an irreligious environment, knows almost nothing, finds out about Shabbos, tries very hard, keeps one Shabbos, and can't do it again after that. It's just too much out of range. I don't know if you've ever had this experience. When I've met with people who are, you know, have no experience at all with Judaism, and they'll ask me some questions, and I'll tell them about kosher and Shabbos, and they'll be like, how do you live that? That's impossible. That's crazy. You got to check for certification and have separate sets of, you know. So how does God, sitting up in heaven, so to speak, how does he look at this? How does he look down upon us and judge us? What are the criteria? Is everyone judged equally? What are the criteria? So we will see how far we get in the time we have on talking about this subject. Obviously, it's a very complex subject. You can imagine it probably becomes a sensitive subject. So let's try to understand some of the criteria and the ideas. The main person who talks about this idea is Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler. I think I quoted him last week as well. Michtav Me'Eliyahu, Strive for Truth in English, very popular work. A great Muslim personality who was also a very deep thinker, and he incorporated a lot of like Hasidic and Kabbalistic thought into his Musar thought, which was a very unique combination for his time. So he talks about the following idea. In Hebrew, he calls it Nikudas HaBechira. Nikudas HaBechira means the point of free will. And there we go. The jet has taken off. So I will just try to talk loud. And on those on Zoom, I'll try to talk loud as well. So I apologize if I sound extra loud. Can you hear me back there? So far, so good. Okay. So the idea that he says, he gives an example. He says as follows. Imagine, unfortunately, right now we don't have to imagine, there are two nations at war with each other. Each country is trying to invade and take over the other country. Okay? At any given moment, assuming there's just one front in the war, there is a point where that battle front is taking place. There's one area that they are fighting over. All right? Today, wars are a lot more complex. There might be multiple fronts. But let's just imagine there's one front in the war. There's one spot that they're fighting over. Most of the territory of country A is under the jurisdiction of country A when the war starts. Most of the territory of country B is under the jurisdiction of country B. They're not really right now fighting over it. Now, if you ask country A, well, what are you fighting over? The entire country B is ours. And if you ask country B, what are you fighting over? The entire country A is ours. Okay, but right now, what are you fighting over? This 6-inch sliver of land right here. Okay, I remember when I was a teenager, learning world history in high school. We were learning about the Lebanon Wars during the late 70s and early 80s, which Israel got into a lot of trouble for, with the massacres and so on and so forth. But this was a war that literally destroyed the entire Lebanon. And in my history book, they had a comic largely the Christian Arabs versus the Muslim Arabs. And so I was saying, oh yeah, so they had this comic. and there was a Christian Arab and a Muslim Arab, and there was a house between them. And they said, fighting over the last house in Beirut. That was the caption. In other words, they had destroyed the whole country. They're fighting over the last house in Beirut. Right now, what is the fight over? Over this piece, over this, whatever it is. Says Rabbi Dessler, every single person at any given point in life has a battlefront in their struggle between the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov, between the good inclination and the evil inclination. We'll try to talk about the nature of that struggle if we have time a little bit more. At any given moment, there's a point in that battlefront. Everything on one side of that is, we'll call it too easy. That's not really my struggle. Everything on the other side of that is too hard. That's not my struggle. My struggle is at a certain point right now in any given area. We discussed last week the idea that all I have control over in my life is to choose between good and evil, between good and bad. That's all I really ultimately have control over is will I make the choice to do what's right or what's not right. Everything else is in Hashem's hands. Right? That's the only thing I really ultimately have control over. And within that, there's only, says Rabbi Dessler, there's one point in the front that is my struggle right now where I have the ability really to choose between what is good and what is wrong, what is evil, what is right and what is wrong. Let's give a very basic example. I'm assuming no one here walks around having this urge to murder anyone, right? Now, there's a mitzvah in the Torah. I'm not asking for answers, by the way. You don't have to actually respond to that. I'm giving everyone the benefit of the doubt on this one. Usually we don't walk around having this urge to murder someone, right? Occasionally I know that the urge is there, but usually not. So neighbors, children, spouses, friends, yes, it happens, but usually not. Usually when you walk by the jewelry store, you don't have this urge to throw a brick through the window and take the jewelry in the window, even during a protest. You don't usually have that urge to do that. Now, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, thou shalt not murder. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, thou shalt not steal. So I come to God after 120 years in this world, and I can say, look, Lord, I did a great job. My whole life, I didn't kill anyone. Right? My whole life, I didn't steal. Didn't break into any banks or into any jewelry stores. I didn't shoplift from King Supers or even Walmart. Even Walgreens, I didn't shoplift from. Anyone who lives in the West Side goes into Walgreens over here, you will know that I have been there on more than one occasion. They're like, hey, get back here. They're either throwing someone out of the store before they shoplift or they're chasing after someone who just shoplifted. And so I haven't done it. So Olam Haba is mine, God, because I kept those commandments perfectly. Is God going to say, oh, great life you did. Beautiful. Or is God going to say, that was easy. That is no big deal. Because you grew up in a society where murder was not on the table at all. Theft was not on the table. It wasn't something that you were raised doing. It wasn't something that you had a drive for in your personality, really. So God says, that's not really what you struggled with. That wasn't your struggle. That's not your nekudas habachira. That's not your point of free will. I get some reward for it, minimal. Okay. Maybe if it is my tendency to get mad when people do something bad, and I have had temptations to murder someone and I overcame that, the guy will say, well, those moments you get greater reward for that, and so on. What is my struggle? Well, the Talmud says if you embarrass someone publicly, it's tantamount to murdering them. So God says, you say you kept that mitzvah of murder all your life. Well, let's see. Were you careful not to shame anyone in public? Because if you shame someone in public to the point, where they're like really embarrassed, like their face turns white type of embarrassment, that is tantamount to murder. Some of you have probably heard this idea. Okay. If you shame someone like really impublicly, so the point of their face, their color drains from his face, her face. So then, that's tantamount to murder. Theft. You're right. You didn't rob a bank, but, were you careful with all areas of theft? Were you careful, like not even, to sample a cookie that was, perhaps not meant for you on the counter? Were you careful, not to, what we call Geneva's Das, stealing a person's mind, not to act deceitfully with people? You owned a business. Were you careful on your books all the time? Did you make sure not to overcharge your customers? That's all. One second, Lord. That's already a little, but you didn't steal. That was your struggle my whole life. I owned a business. Every day I had to struggle to make sure that my weights are accurate. I had to struggle to make sure that I reported everything accurately, that I wasn't trying to cheat anyone. That's all included in theft. that may very well be, for a lot of people, a point of free will. That is the point of struggle. That is the point of Bechira. Says Rabbi Dessler, when we talk about a person's point of free will, you have to identify within each person. And this, again, we'll take this back to what we started with. Don't judge someone else until you reach their place. Every person in his life, in every area of moral mitzvah performance, morality, doing the right thing, every person has a point where he's at. This is the battleground between good and evil. Right here. This is the point. For some people, might be back here. For some people, might be way up there. But everyone has a point of free will that they are struggling with at that moment. And that is where that person's struggle between good and evil is going on at that moment. Okay, any questions before I go on? No? Okay, let's, yeah, go ahead.
What if somebody's wired to weird things? I mean, like they get a high out of their can't stop, and like a serial killer.
Right.
That's what I'm gonna
talk about some examples right now. So that's an excellent point. So let's go back to the case I started with, which Rabbi Tetz, when he discusses this, he mentions this case. You have a girl who exhibits symptoms of kleptomania, and she has been caught shoplifting several times. Now she's in court, and the question is, do we send her off to juvenile detention? Or do we send her off to a psychiatric ward? Maybe both.
Can you give us a sense of how old the person
is? I don't recall. Let's keep it simple. An adult who is in full possession of her faculties.
A young woman.
Yeah. Okay. Let's say a young woman. Okay. Well, the question is, what is her point? I'm not talking about the judge who's judging her, but Hashem up in heaven, God up in heaven is judging this person for theft. Okay. God looks and says, what is your point of struggle? Is this something which you have the capability to overcome at this point in your life? That is the question. Then that is that person's point of free will. If God looks and says, you know, God being all-knowing, omniscient, says, I know that the way you're wired, if you walk into a supermarket, if you walk into a department store, it is impossible for you to overcome that urge to steal. You just have to take it off the shelf and put it in your pocket, then you're not responsible for it. You're not responsible for it because it's beyond that point. That's not the battlefront right now. That's not the battlefront. It's just beyond this person's control. Okay? Now, if she has this need to take something, and she can choose between taking a 25-cent, nothing costs 25 cents anymore, a $1 trinket, even the dollar store is going up to a buck and a quarter now. Yeah. So you can choose between taking a dollar and a quarter trinket or stealing a high-priced brand name, item. Let's just say she has this urge. Take something. She has to take something for whatever reason. Okay? And it's not within her control to overcome that. But, says God, but you do have a choice. Will you steal the high-priced item or the low-priced item? Then that's her free choice. That is the point. So God will judge her. Huh? You can make the argument. You're right. You're right. Let us suppose, and again, let's give a few cases over here. I can't touch on every case, but we'll give a few examples and you can apply it to other things. Let us suppose you have an individual who's brought up, in a cannibalistic tribe. Let's just say. And they are trained from when they are, are trained. This is how you live. You cannibalize each other, right? You know, the story of the cannibals who were eating a clown, and one turned to the other and says, does this taste funny to you? So anyways, I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to give you any more.
No.
I'll give you one more good one. That's too good to pass up. One cannibal turns to the other and says, I really don't like my mother-in-law. So the other one says, so then just eat the potatoes. Okay. We just have to get a mother.
That was better.
The mother-in-law jokes. Okay. There we go. Anyways, with all due respect to mothers-in-law. So, let us suppose he's brought up. This is the norm. This is the norm. That's how he's brought up. In his mind, it is perfectly acceptable to take another person's life because, as Aladdin said on the Disney movie, got to eat to live. And this is how we live. Okay. So for him, that's not, he doesn't know better. He's brought up thinking this is a mitzvah. On the contrary. But here's the point of free choice. Let us suppose that he indeed takes another life, but now he has a choice. Is he going to share it with the guy next door or he's going to keep it all for himself. That might be, where's that coming from? Oh, okay. Just sorry. I was trying to figure out if something glitched with the sound system.
Musical accompaniment.
That's right. We have the background music today. Okay. So his point of free will may be, is he going to share it with everyone else or keep it all for himself? I know this sounds very morbid and horrible, but you brought up the murder question. So I'll give you an example. You have people who are brought up in societies where murder is par for the course, right? You have, let's take it. You have societies, without getting political or too practical, where it's a mitzvah to go out and kill people of a particular religion. That's how he's brought up. In his mind, this is the greatest thing he could do. It's a mitzvah. Is he really guilty when he goes in and does that? Who bears the guilt for that? Does he? If he believed, because he was brought up with his mother's milk to believe that this is the greatest thing you could do in your life, is to go murder someone from that race or religion or group? Or is that not within his free will? Now, can we decide that? No. Why? Because we have to go back to that Mishnah. Don't judge someone else till he reaches her shoes. We cannot judge that. Only Hashem judges it. A few thoughts, factors to think about, just in terms of just how complex this is. He can claim, well, I was brought up this way. Okay, but didn't you ever watch mass media? You never watched news, or you weren't exposed to other ideas? Did the thought never occur to you that maybe this is the wrong thing to do? Maybe that's a factor. So maybe God says, well, you're right. You were brought up this way to think it's a mitzvah. But did you really give serious thought to whether what you're being taught is really true or not? Did you think about it? Or you just blindly followed and just went around killing people? That's a factor. Cultures are a factor. Environment. So all these things are factors. They're all factors. And we cannot possibly ascertain if the person, where's that person's point of free will? We cannot possibly ascertain that truly and exactly where that's at. We can't. It's impossible. Only Hashem can know, because there's so many factors that go into ascertaining where that struggle lies. As a society, we have a mitzvah to create a court system on a very basic level, because society cannot function if there's anarchy, anarchists notwithstanding. If there's anarchy and there's no government and there's no civil system in place, there's no court system in place, society cannot function. And so on a very basic level, you have to have a court system. God says there has to be a court system. If a person does X, Y, Z, assuming the person is of sound mind, that person is held accountable. But the personality and environment and how he was raised and where he was brought up. Torah says, if you check these boxes, there's a punishment. That is what God says. So God is giving us the keys and saying, I know it's complicated. I know you can't really fully ascertain where this person lines up, in terms of righteousness or guilt. But at the end of the day, this person did something which the Torah says he has to be punished for. You got to follow the rules. Whether you can fully judge this person to the nth degree or not, doesn't matter. Yeah.
I would maintain that it doesn't make any difference if the person is fully responsible for his actions. The purpose of the judgment to put someone in prison is to keep that person from harming other people. You may not be able to straighten out his brain or his motivations, but you have to protect society.
Okay. That's I think one element in terms of prison. I think there are probably a lot of elements in terms of prison punishments in general. A lot of society will tell you it has to do with justice, bring a person to justice. That's a very popular notion today in society. And I don't want to get into a discussion about that. But there's that idea is expressed in the Torah as well. The Torah says the Torah charges a bezdin, a court of law, to bring a murderer to justice. And the Torah says, why? Not this guy won't go kill other people. The Torah says, bring the justice because the murdered person's blood cries out for justice. That's what the Torah says. I mean, it starts already from Cain and Abel. His blood is crying out from the ground. That idea is there. So the idea of punishment for justice, and again, maybe I'll have another class on justice one day and revenge and so on and what that means. Okay, but just for our discussion, once we have the Torah's framework for what to do, we don't judge beyond what the Torah says we judge. We don't necessarily delve into background, personality, and so on. If the person qualifies according to halacha as a person who's not of sound mind, what we call a shote, person who's deranged, that's a whole different story. He's exempt. But if the person doesn't cross that line, then he's accountable for what he's done. Even though he has serious challenges, we say, fine, but it's still within the pale of possibility. You could have struggled with that and overcome and not murder the person, assuming he's of sound mind. it might be very hard. Most people don't want to murder people. This guy, he's got a temper problem, and it gets so bad, and it's hard for him to control, that he can, you know, fly into rage and potentially murder someone. You're right. It's harder for him. For him, that's a struggle. But he's accountable for that. He's accountable for that. Yeah.
Murderers, I can't do that argument because the person's gone.
Okay.
But the stealing, so what about restitution? Every time you steal, you have to make...
Correct.
...make good. I mean, that's a kind of justice. We may not be able to... He may not be able to control that, but so the justice may be you need to make restitution. You
correct.
You work with this company, you need to pay it back, whatever.
Right. That's true. I mean, in the context of theft, the Torah, you rarely find prison in the Torah. You find in one or two spots, but really, in the terms of theft, the Torah just mandates restitution. In certain cases, maybe paying back double as a penalty, and so on, but you are correct. You know, restitution. Correct. Again, that's a question for a justice system.
Yeah.
Okay? So, at the end of the day, again, I'm a little short on time today, so maybe we will continue next week, you know, to further this discussion along and go deeper into it. But on a basic level, when we talk about, we have free will, and if you just take that at face value, you would have a person believe that everything is within the purview of good and evil. I have free choice to do everything, either wrong or right. The reality is a lot more complicated. The reality is that just about everyone has some things that are way below them. It's not a temptation at all. Everyone has things that are way above them, that it's just not within their purview. If you, you know, we have great Musar personalities, people who work themselves their entire lives, who got to a point where they wouldn't even move their hand without thinking about it. Okay? I am not even close, not even like in the realm of thinking about that. Okay? Present company excluded, but for most people, you know, that's not even in the purview. Do I think before I pick my hand up? Probably not. Think before I speak? Probably within my purview. Think before you speak. That is something which is in my purview. So, people who have worked themselves and become greater and greater and greater, their battlefront, as they conquer, so to speak, more and more territory in the battle between good and more becomes already under their control. And that's not the point of their free will anymore. People who go the other direction, let's say you have someone who started off and everything was fine and normal, but he made some bad decisions and now he's in a bad place. So now his free will was in a much higher place before. Let's say you have someone brought up in normal, regular society. He didn't have a temptation to steal. One day he gave into the temptation to steal, did it again. Before he knows it, it's already become habitual. Right? The Talmud says the person who sins once, twice, it becomes permitted. Talmud says it becomes permitted. If I commit a sin once, twice, it becomes permitted. Talmud says, no, it doesn't become permitted. In your mind, it now becomes permitted. Once I do something once, twice, three times, I get habituated into it. Now I have a bigger struggle. As long as I didn't do it, right, that first cigarette is where the biggest mistake was made, right? That first, let me just try, and, you know, the whatever, insert illicit substance here. Let me just try it once. Bad idea. Now, once the person makes that decision, now they have a big struggle. Until then, they weren't drawn to it. Once they've tried that first cigarette, once, twice, three times, oh, that's it. Now it becomes a real struggle. So in those cases, interestingly enough, a person is held accountable in both directions. If I spend my life struggling, let's say with my anger, and I built myself up so that I used to be, my anger struggle was down here. I would get upset at the smallest thing. And I built my control, and now I'm around here. So these things, I don't get upset about anymore. I get upset about these things. Okay? Do I still get reward from God for overcoming this? That's easy. God says, yes. You know why? Because you did it. You conquered that territory. So that's yours. You get reward for that every time. If I started life up here, so then overcoming this, God says, that was easy. You don't get much for that. But if you conquered it, you're right, now it's easy. But now it's yours. You overcame that. That is yours. You get reward for that. Conversely, person started off, let's say, with his temptation for theft up here, and then he gave in once or twice and went down, now it's here. So now, theft at this level is way out of bounds. That's beyond his control. He's held accountable for that also. Why? Because God says, that was in your purview, you gave it up. So you're held accountable for that as well. He has to now struggle to climb back up again, and he's held accountable for even what's not under his purview now, because it was. You gave it up willingly. You chose, so to speak, to give it up. You're held accountable. Okay? So just in closing, going back to our original, do not judge someone else until you reach their place. As I explained, you cannot, you know, it's impossible for us to judge anyone else fully and fully appreciate what they're struggling with. We can have some idea, perhaps. Even if we know everything that's going on with that person, even if we know everything, and more often than not, we don't. But even if we know everything that is happening, to fully judge and decide if a person is good or evil, very, very, you know, it's nigh well impossible. We can label an action good or evil. This action is evil, but you can't label the person based on that, right? And for us, what it means is for us is that we have to think about this. What we really get reward for is where we struggle. What's already easy for us because we were brought up that way, or because it's our personality to be that way, you don't get much credit for that. And you really can't take credit for that. That's how you are. That's how you were brought up. That was the nature. What you get reward, what you really are, the person you really are, what you really are is what you conquered through your struggling to overcome for good, to overcome evil, to choose the good over the evil where you struggled. That is ultimately where we get the reward. And that is where we really become, build ourselves as people. That is, you know, it's a powerful idea that people often say, well, I'm a basically good person. Really? Why are you a basically good person? Well, I don't steal. I do this. I carry people. Did you struggle with that and overcome it? Or you just go with the flow of what everyone else does because that's how you were brought up. And that's what people do. And that's what society does. You're just floating along. So I might be a person who basically does good things because I was raised as my personality to do good things. Fine. But can you honestly say that you are a truly good person because you're struggling? I'm not going to answer that question because I can't judge anyone else. We can only judge ourselves. But constantly struggling with what we struggle with, that is why we are here, to struggle at the point that we are struggling. To say, well, I basically up to a point, so I'm good. No. If you stop struggling, then you're not acting as a human. You're not struggling between good and evil. Every day, every moment, we have to ascertain, where's my struggle? And keep struggling with that. What's not realistic? I'm not going to worry about now. That's for down the line. What is realistic? That's what I have to struggle with. That's what we call our point of free will. Okay, I'll stop here.